Hi, listeners. This is Andy. Before we get into this episode, I want to take a moment to pause and acknowledge yet again the life and the death of the teenager from Owosso, Nex Benedict. You probably saw earlier this week that the medical examiner's office released a report indicating that the cause of death was suicide. And while that might be true for the end of Nex's life, I think it's important that we recognize that that is not the only contributing factor, that is not the root cause of this situation. Nex decided to die by suicide as the result of months or years of ongoing horrific bullying that they faced in school. And I know in a previous episode, I shared a story from my own life of a classmate of mine who, for the same reasons, right, of ongoing bullying throughout middle school, decided to die by suicide as well. And the impact that that's made on my life. And I know that many of you and your children are still reeling from this situation. While I hope that we see meaningful, real policy change, steps the legislature could be taking right now to put into place safeguards for anybody who is facing any kind of bullying, right? Safeguards to protect, to uplift, to strengthen communities rather than divide us amongst ourselves. We have not yet seen that kind of leadership from our state legislature. We have not seen that from our state board of education. And in many cases, we've not seen it from our local education boards or city councils. I'm here to say that our elected officials have a responsibility and a duty to ensure and to protect the citizens they represent, the members of our state they represent. I know a lot of us wish, right, that somebody would come and save us. That we wish that there was someone that could step in and make things right. And I think we often put too much emphasis on the outcomes of elections, hoping that we are going to elect a savior to come in and make things better. And that isn't happening. I think as I've wrestled with this over the last several weeks, the conclusion I keep coming back to is that there is no one else coming to save us. We, listeners, we are the ones that we've been waiting for. You are the one we've been waiting for. It is our responsibility, each of us, in our own way, to hold one another, to bind up each other's wounds, to carry one another when we can't walk, when we're hurt or injured or sick. It is we who must demand from our government and from our neighbors better. Nex Benedict deserved better. You deserve better. And that change can and must come from the people, right? I'm not going to use this right now as a opportunity to like lecture on low voter turnout. You all know what the data says already. I am going to say that we can make real, real, powerful, meaningful change if we are willing. It is hard. It is scary sometimes. It is immensely rewarding when we do it, right? And if you're not sure what to do, it's this. You got to talk to people. You've got to make relationships. You've got to build relationships with people you don't know already, with friends, strangers, neighbors, kids, teachers, elected officials. Just have conversations. You don't have to confront them on this hard and, you know, like in a confrontational way. You can, maybe some cases it's warranted. But we've got to start by coming together, building strength and power in our communities, and opening the door, creating space for more people to join us, right? I know I'm guilty, especially since the pandemic, of kind of holding up at home, stuck with my own frustrations and feelings, and I might talk to my spouse or a few friends about it that are undoubtedly an echo chamber in those ways. They might share that. And the frustrating thing, you keep banging your head against the wall. It's like, you know that there are other people out there that share these sentiments. Most people are never invited to the table to make change. Most people don't know where to ask. The fact that you are listening to this podcast today means you're probably in the more plugged in, more connected, more activist-y part of our state. And there are hundreds and thousands of people out there that you can reach that just need to have the door opened. In the coming months, between now and the end of May, we are working really hard to be intentional and to design some opportunities for you to get connected. Those opportunities, in some cases, will look like phone banking or text banking, both to people you know and possibly to strangers, right? To help build those bridges. It'll be knocking doors. It'll be having a table at an event. Maybe you're asking people to register to vote. And part of that is about explaining why it's important to you. So you can go ahead and start thinking about that. Why do you vote even when you think it's hard? Even when you're not sure it's going to make a measurable impact? What are the issues you care most about? Is it bullying? Is it healthcare? Is it education? Whatever it is, what are the things in your world around you that matter a lot? What are the pain points? What are the comfort points? What are the things you take for granted that you know are a result of public policy and most of us don't ever think about it? Having a good understanding of what matters to you and why it matters is the first step in opening the door and creating space for others to come in, right? Because you can help them connect with those issues in their own life. Nobody's coming to save us but us. I don't mean that in a dark or sad way. I mean that in a super empowering way. You have the power to make an enormous impact in your community. Together, we have the power to change policy, to change hearts and minds, and to do everything we can to ensure that no one else faces the same life or the same death that next Benedict faced. If you are interested in getting involved in doing something more than what you've been doing, please send us an email. You can just send it to podcast@letsfixthis.org, or you can go to our website, letsfixthis.org/volunteer, fill out the form, check your areas of interest, and we'll make sure that you get looped in as these opportunities come on board. And if you don't feel like you can right now, that's okay too. This is a hard time, scary time for lots of folks. For my friends and my family who have children that are trans or non-binary, or honestly identify as anything in the 2SLGBTQIA2+ like community, as we, well, first of all, just know that I see you, that we see you, we care about you, we love you and your children for exactly who you are. If you have the means to support an organization that is leading the work here, go to Freedom Oklahoma. Nicole and their team over there are doing tremendous work. It's gut-wrenching, right? If you see them in the community, ask them if they want a hug, you know, give money, send them some cookies. I don't know what it can do, but there's an opportunity to get involved and to make a tangible impact for people today, this weekend, that need it in a big way. Showing up in support, not just with like social media posts, but physically showing up with your bodies, with your time, with your treasure, whatever you can do, really means a lot. I'm thankful you're here, listeners. I appreciate the hard work you do in our communities. As we go through this year, there's a whole lot of stuff on the ballot that isn't someone's name, right? We will elect certain people, but we are fighting for people's lives, like Next Benedict, who aren't on the ballot. We are fighting for policy to protect, to uplift, to ensure prosperity and hope and a future for everyone in our communities. And that means that in 2024, out of all the years, like, this is our chance to really lean in and make a big difference. Okay, let's get on with the episode. Hello and welcome to Let's Pod This. I'm your host, Andy Moore. It's good to be with you again this week. Happy Friday night in the big town. I think since Gary England's not on TV to say it, someone's got to say it. And that's what we do here on the podcast. Happy Civic Learning Week, listeners. This whole week, it's been about civic learning and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's been deadline week at the Capitol. And it's the floor deadline week for bills to pass off the floor of their chamber of origin. And is always the case on these sort of deadline weeks, there's been some late nights at the Capitol, some late night votes, contentious debate, some really great bills that made it through, some really great bills that died, some really bad bills that made it through, and thankfully some really bad bills that died. We are recording this on Thursday, so actually we haven't even hit the deadline yet, and that means we don't entirely know how this is going to shake out, but next week will be a bit of a dead week at the legislature because of spring break, and we'll have more of a kind of a legislative update next week to talk about some of the bills themselves. Thank you, listeners, for any of you who took action this week. We sent out an action alert about House Bill 1105, which would make some really negative changes to the initiative petition process. Unfortunately, that's one of the bad bills that passed off the floor yesterday. Not unexpected. It was authored by Speaker McCaul, and it's rare that a leadership bill doesn't pass off the floor. But still, in the name of democracy, I'm disappointed. But we live to fight another day over in the Senate. Hopefully, the upper chamber will have a different perspective on this legislation. Today, though, we have two guests in studio, different guests here for different reasons. First is our new staff member, our new policy and research fellow, Ava Woodall. Hello, Ava.
Hi, glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Ava, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you going to school? What are your interests, experience in this sector?
So I am a freshman at the University of Central Oklahoma in Edmond. In my free time, rodeo and compete on horses and do all sorts of fun things with those big animals. And then kind of the inspiration for even taking this job on, I guess, in the first place is my grandmother. She helped guide me through a lot of the political interests that I have today. She is the treasurer for the Garfield Democratic County Women's Club, with her and Nancy Presnell. They're a wonderful group of ladies. So, yeah.
Excellent. Kind of it. And for those who might not know, Garfield County is Enid area, right?
Yes,
Enid's
the county. Northwestern Oklahoma.
County seat. Great. Well, excellent. We're excited to have you. I'm sure we will have you on the program in future weeks as well.
I'd love to.
This is literally Ava's first day. So I was like, do you want to be on the mic on your first day? Our other guest that is our featured guest for this week is a return guest. It's Michelle Tilley. Hello, Michelle.
Hi there. So happy to be here again.
Michelle, you were last on the program talking about State Question 820,
yes,
right? Which
yes.
was the recreational cannabis from a couple of years ago. But since then, lives have changed, gone on, and you have a new role in the democracy space in Oklahoma. You are the new executive director for Generation Citizen for the South Region. Some listeners, I think Amy Curran, when she was in that role, was on the show previously. And I know you've only been in the role for, I don't know, not even 4 months probably now.
That's right. I think I just hit my 90-day number.
All right. Well, hey, that's the first. You know, you get a chip or something for employment as well. I don't know.
I got a really nice note from some people within the organization thanking me for jumping in. So
excellent. Super.
It was really nice.
Well, and I'm sure that some of our listeners are probably familiar with Generation Citizen. I know that, you know, they've been a longtime partner, but for new listeners or those who might have missed it before, could you tell us a little bit about the organization and kind of what y'all do?
Sure. I'm just thrilled to have joined this organization. Generation Citizen is a nonprofit educational organization that works to provide project-based civics education to students in school. We train teachers with professional development opportunities. There's a curriculum, and it embeds into a normal classroom in a school, and the teacher can decide. Sometimes it'll be a semester long project, and sometimes it'll be a few weeks, but it really centers the students, and students organize their own democracy, have to learn how to work together to try to identify an issue that they see important in their community. And then they develop a project to solve that problem. And it really gives students another experience in preparing them for their civic life as they enter into adulthood, and shows them they can be a part of civic life right now. It's beyond the classic book, you know, civics that we know, that we grew up with, which is important, but this is a complement to that. So it teaches them how to engage at all levels with civic life to solve problems and work together to do that.
Yeah, and you guys do, like, a at the end of every semester, a civics day, which is
yes.
like a science fair for civics projects, right?
Yes.
And I've been one of the community
advisors.
Yeah, advisors.
Like
judges, but that we're not really judging.
That's right.
For almost all of the civics days that have happened here in the last 6 or 8 years. And every time it is absolutely inspiring and fascinating to see what students have come up with and how they've identified problems in their communities. I know you've only attended one, but I'm certainly you're kind of familiar with some of the projects. Do you have any examples of topics or projects you could share?
Well, the most basic way I explain the program is, say the kids get together and decide that there is a trash problem in their local park and there's just always trash everywhere. So they're going to get together and agree on that as a problem. And then they don't just go and pick up the trash. They say, what is the root cause of that problem? Mm-hmm. And they may look around and realize that there are no trash cans in the park. And so then they'll research and, you know, see what it cost for trash cans in the park and who could make that happen. You know, that'd be your city council. So they'll get together with their project, and that's the project that they will present at Civics Day. And community advisors help them and give them feedback on how to make their project better. A lot of connections happen because we have community advisors who come from all over the state, all fields, you know, connecting them with those people they need to be connected with. And some of these projects have actually turned into bills that have been passed. The governor has actually signed an executive order based on one of our student projects. And so that's very basic, but the issues range, you know, from something that's community-based, very community-based like that, or it could be, you know, mental health issues. We saw a lot of those this year, and things, education problems, things in their school. It could be a wide range of things that affects them locally all the way up to the state level.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, some of the ones that stand out to me, there was students in Tuttle, I think, that didn't have a community pool and like worked on how to get a community pool, like swimming pool built, which was phenomenal, right? And then even, I think it was also in Tuttle, where they, there was a safety concern about a school, like when they're playing on the playground, that, you know, they're soccer balls and stuff would roll into like the
that one was Meeker.
It was a Meeker. Okay, yes, so down there. Yes. But it was like their balls would like go into the roadway, which was like a state highway.
Yes.
And they were like, well, we need a fence. And it was just, it's sometimes just students seeing through their eyes. And I think for me, one of the more fascinating things is seeing the trends year over year of like what are the topics that the students are addressing.
Absolutely.
And there really is like themes.
Absolutely.
This year, there was a lot of students talking about crime, mm-hmm. that I, at least for the ones that I saw, because you don't, it's almost impossible to see all the projects. Yes. There's so many. But seeing how students in, you know, maybe the metro area versus students from Guymon, who both had identified crime as an issue, but their root cause analysis was a little bit different for their community. And then how they went about addressing that. And some of them had like, some of them worked with police, some worked with faith leaders or locally elected officials. And it was just when you start realizing that like high school and middle school students are trying to solve problems that we see on the evening news.
That's right.
That it seems like grown-ups haven't figured out what to do. And the kids are like, well, here's the solution. And we're already working on it. Gives me a lot of faith in the future, right? A little bit, a lot of hope to be like, okay, maybe the kids are all right and we've got some brighter days ahead.
Absolutely. And I mean, that is just a common issue among all citizens and all ages. A lot of times they just don't realize how really easily accessible our elected officials are and, you know, other entities to help us solve these problems. And, you know, we get really overwhelmed with all of the huge issues that are facing all of us in our everyday lives. But there are just small issues like that that can move a community forward and make lives better for local people. And really a group of a few high school students can do it. And we want to give them, you know, that feeling that as they go through their life that they'll be able to continue to solve problems, work with our government to solve problems and work with their fellow citizens to solve problems, no matter, again, if we disagree on issues and how to do that so that we can see real results, because it really is on all of us as citizens of this country to engage in some way. And it's not that inaccessible. And a lot of times it's not really that time consuming either. It's just a matter of, you know, working together to try to figure out the answer. So,
yeah. And you mentioned like the role of the community advisors earlier, and I can think of one of the early civics days that was held at the state capitol. And I was the group of advisors I was with, like you get assigned a few projects to review, and the students had identified something in the school system. And they had, you know, talked to some people and they hadn't quite figured out the solution. And one of my fellow advisors said, have you talked to your school board about it? And they're like, no, we thought about that. But we weren't sure who to reach out to. And it was him. He was the school board member. And he was like, well, it's me. Like, this is what I do. And they were like, oh, great. But it gave him a chance. He was like, I was not aware of this at all. And so it was in real time. I'm just standing there watching high school students and a school board member communicate about a problem that they knew about that he didn't, and they could have this dialogue. And he's like, here's my number, like, let's work on this. And to see stuff like that happen, it, you know, we say on this show every week, right? Decisions are made by those who show up. And just by simply showing up to this event, decisions were made, problems were being solved. And I was like, oh, right. Like there's a lot to be said for simply showing up, right?
Absolutely.
And being present in a conversation, and you never know what can happen. And so I'm sure those students got more than they bargained for, right? They were nervous about presenting. But in that moment, man, you could see them be like, oh, yeah, I've practiced for this moment right now.
Absolutely.
Here's the data. Here's the problem. And he was like, okay, let's get on it. I was like, well, maybe we should solve more problems like this in this building. There was no partisan bickering. Like none of this politics did not come into play. It was a problem and a solution, and the person in the right position of power to make it happen. And it was full steam ahead. It was great.
Yeah, it does. It shows the power of sometimes we get so caught up in the bigger partisan issues that we don't make the space to just have one-on-one conversations with people about actual problems.
Right.
I'm not that those aren't actual problems, they are, but the small things sometimes get overlooked, and again, this gives students, and as you said, adults, the opportunity to experience that in action. And you know, I came into this job thinking, oh, I just can't wait to share everything I know with all these kids and, you know, help them get access to what's going on in government. And at that civics day, I learned more from them than I know I shared with them.
Yeah.
You know, it was, we have a lot to learn from the youth voice. And at Generation Citizen, one of our core values and things that we hold at the front of everything we do is giving youth a voice and making the space and helping them with their skills so that they have a voice and know that their voice is important, not just in the future, but now, today, because we do have a lot to learn from them.
Yeah. This is before you were around, but when Generation Citizen first came to Oklahoma, after the first year or so, the National Board had come for Civics Day and we were having lunch. And one of the board members said to me, like, all of the projects here are like really big issues, like heavy things like female incarceration and homelessness and stuff. And he was like, this isn't always the case in some of our other states. Sometimes they get issues that aren't as, you know, adultish, as heavy-ish. And he's like, what's going on here? And I was like, well, I don't have the answer. Like, you should ask the students because clearly these are the problems that they identified. And I'm willing to bet if they went to an advisor and said, hey, we're thinking about addressing female incarceration, that's a big issue that I'm directly impacted by, the adult might be like, well, that's a big problem. Maybe we shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids were like, this is the problem. There was several in that group. There was like several students whose mothers had been incarcerated for a big chunk of their youth. In almost every case for pretty petty crimes, right? Mm-hmm. And like came down to like fines and fees. And they were like, we've got to fix this because my mom has not been around because she couldn't pay a fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, oh my gosh. Well, if they are picking these out as like the key issues, this is not like what you hear most policymakers talking about. And it was a really good reminder that we need to listen to people that are closest to the problems that are most impacted. And often when given the opportunity and the connections, like they know what the solution needs to be, right? Mm-hmm. They can see the problem. They can see the solution. They're just not sure how to make it happen. And I think programs like Generation Citizen make that connection so much closer that it's like a really effective way to bring about community level change in a way that is tangible to citizens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, part of the curriculum as they're walking through it helps them identify what is within their, you know, purview and then push it a little further. Obviously, we can't solve the entire issue of women's incarceration in the state of Oklahoma, but it helps walk them through what is that part that I can make a difference in? What is the part that we can help us take the next step to solve that big, big problem? And I know something that we hear a lot from students, I hear it from my own daughters that are teenagers, is it just feels so overwhelming right now. Like there's just so much, so much. And so one of our goals is to help break that down so that it doesn't feel so overwhelming to know that just with my project, I did something. And even just someone listened to me to know that people want to hear from students.
Yeah,
so.
Right. And that's the other thing too, right? Is those conversations, because they're students and not fellow politicians, those conversations end up happening with like on a where everyone's negotiating in good faith, right? Like there's not an assumption of a power struggle.
Mm-hmm.
It's just constituents saying like, hey, here's the issue, and having that conversation with elected officials. And that when you strip away all the gunk that none of us like about politics, you're like, oh, we really can come together and get stuff done.
Yes, yes. And, you know, we also try to connect our students in classroom with community resources and elected officials as they're doing their research on the issues and the projects. You know, we had Representative Mark McBride visit one of our classrooms this year, and Representative Jacob Rosecrantz, and many others across the, you know, spectrum. We have had, you know, like you mentioned, police officers visit, but also representative from a domestic violence shelter visit. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to give them, you know, help them to get a lot of different views on what's going on, yeah. And engage. And it's been really, really neat to hear feedback from those people that have visited classrooms, at the thoughtful questions that our students ask.
Yeah.
And again, as you were pointing out about the school board member, the things they learn.
Yeah. I mean, I do a fair amount of public speaking, and I, you know, I joke that if you can talk to a crowd about sexual behaviors in a presentation, you can probably talk to them about anything, right? My actual thing is, if you can talk to rural Oklahomans about anal sex, you can talk about anything in front of a crowd. But one of the most nervous times I've ever had was in front of a GC classroom when they wanted to talk about voting rights and ballot access. And like the idea that is passing in some states, right, that allowing 16-year-olds to vote in like local elections, and just why Oklahoma's laws are the way they are. And I knew that I wasn't coming in as the enemy. I was coming in as a, you know, hopefully an expert resource. Mm-hmm. But those students were super well prepared and asked really tough questions. And the truthful answers are difficult sometimes of like, well, this is a policy decision. And
yes.
And I was like, this, again, like, despite all that they've got going on in their lives, this is the issue they picked. Says a lot to me of like, they weren't just going with the easy, you know, we want healthier food in the snack machine or something. That, I don't know if that's an easy problem or not, but.
And that is, and some of our projects are that,
right,
you know, and that's something that's important to them. And again, when they're in that classroom setting, they have to, part of the skills that we're trying to help them experience, part of the skills we're trying to help them experience are how to work with other people who may have different ideas. So yeah. You could, like in real life, have a lot of people in a classroom that have different ideas about what the problem is and what the issue is. And yes. So sometimes they settle on something maybe a little more neutral because it's something that they can, you know, all agree on is a problem that we need to do first.
That's
so
right.
So you do see a wide spectrum, and it does depend on the community as well. Like you mentioned in Meeker, that is something, you know, here in Oklahoma City, you know, you might see fences all around the schools, but there, that was something they didn't have, but yeah. Was clearly a safety issue and something that they noticed.
Yeah.
And so.
That's great. Well, so Michelle, this week is Civic Learning Week, which is a national thing, a
yes.
National awareness week. I think it was also Sunshine Week for those of you listeners who care about the First Amendment and government transparency, and I know you all do. But let's talk about Civic Learning Week. Can you tell us a little bit about the week itself or what activities you are aware of happening and why it's important?
Yes, Civic Learning Week is a national event that where there are, you know, hundreds of organizations working in the civic learning space across the country, and several here in Oklahoma. And it's a time for us to come together and try to highlight the importance of civic education and remind people that this is still a big need, and it's our duty to every generation continue to renew civic education for the next generation, and just also let people know kind of what's going on in the civic education space. So, you know, lots of podcasts like this we're trying to visit, and we've done some of our own programming at the national level too. The Civic Learning Coalition held an advocacy day yesterday at the Capitol and did some training, which was great. And then we'll just done some op-eds and
yeah.
different things. So,
well, and one thing that I like about Civic Learning Week is that it's not just about like K-12 students, right? Like this is about the importance of civic learning.
Always. Yes.
And I'm sure many of our listeners are like me that like, I'm sure I had civics in government growing up, but I probably didn't pay super close attention. And it certainly didn't impact me until, you know, like 2016 or so, when I was like a grown adult and started to understand how this stuff impacts people's lives directly. And I had to learn a ton. And another good example is during the teacher walkout in 2018, I remember being at the Capitol and, you know, there's hundreds or thousands of teachers there who are educators and have like their, you know, yellow legal pad. And they're like walking around being like, hey, now how does this work? And like
yes.
taking notes on who they need to talk to, what's the legislative process? And I'd be like, what do you teach? And like, I'm an English teacher. This is not my forte, but I'm learning right now. And I was like, this is a massive civics lesson in vivo right here. It was so cool to see. And I think in today's environment, right, in this election year, with all the ins and outs and nuances about democracy in America today, there's a whole lot of people who are starting to realize they've got to tune in mm-hmm. in a way they haven't in the past. Mm-hmm. And that means a lot of civic learning, right? And opportunities to put that learning into practice. And so.
Well, and the civics education that a lot of us had of my age anyway, and I know my parents' age, I'm in my late 40s, was, you know, it's the basics. And I actually even taught government out at Redlands Community College for 5 years. About 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's the basics. And those are important things. We do need to learn them. But our democracy is always changing. And, you know, even I'm sure you've seen since you've been involved at the Capitol, the process changes all the time. The basics are the same. But like, what's deadline week? How many votes is it going to take? You know, how does it get on the calendar? Those rules change from session to session. So it's really and that's just at the higher level. At the lower level, like we've seen the right to petition yesterday, they're trying to change the rules for that. And so, you know, in school, we may have learned, oh, we have this right, but how do you go about it is constantly changing. So it's important for us to continue to learn. And we can always learn something, always. And it's very important for us to understand we do have a place in civic life. And one of the other things is, you know, with STEM education being pushed so far to the forefront over the last, you know, 20 years, which is super important. I 1,000% agree STEM is important. But classes like civics have gone to the wayside. And it's very difficult, even for us as generation citizen, as we're, you know, visiting with schools, sometimes civics class, a lot of schools don't have them.
Yeah.
And, you know, government, maybe everyone doesn't take that. And so our curriculum does fit into leadership classes, into Oklahoma history, into government, just social studies, any kind of social studies class. But one thing we want to highlight in Civic Learning Week is the importance of funding civics education in our schools. Yes. And making sure that students do have the opportunity, just like, you know, financial literacy has now become a requirement in schools. And it's important for us to remember all of these things make us well-rounded citizens who can, you know, survive together in this democracy as we grow up. And so we've got to remember to continue the importance of those things as well.
Yeah, 100%. My kids are, my older kids are 10 and 12 now, and they've like learned the presidents, and they know mm-hmm. my son went to DC last year on a trip, and like they know some of those basics.
Yes.
And I mean, I couldn't name all the presidents myself, probably ever, certainly not now. And they know these little facts about them. My son was a expert on Harriet Tubman for about 2 weeks, and which is like super important. Yeah. I was like, I definitely didn't learn about her when I was in school. But then when it comes to like the more nuanced aspects of how things happen today, they don't, obviously they're not old enough to really like fully understand some of that. But when I was working on redistricting right a few years ago and talking, they were asking questions about gerrymandering, what does this mean? And trying to explain it to them and have them repeat it back to me mm-hmm. was so enlightening to me on, oh yeah, like this, there's a lot of people that need education around this issue. And once they get it, it's like immediately evident of like, oh, this is massively important, even to a, you know, 8-year-old. Right. And if they can understand it and see the flaws in the system, then surely like adults out there will get it too, if given the opportunity. And I think that's, I mean, if we don't understand, we don't even know how the system works, we are less likely to engage with it.
Yes.
And in a state where we have the lowest voter participation in the country, I think that's probably indicative of the level of importance we place on civics education. So,
yes, yeah. And I mean, even if we don't want to, we're going to encounter government in our lives. All, you know, throughout our lives, we're gonna have some sort of problem with the government that we have to deal with. Maybe you get a speeding ticket. You know, maybe you're just trying to figure out, I don't know, some change in your kid's school.
Yeah.
And so you're going to always be coming across these problems. We all do. And it's not that everyone has to become a deep expert like some of us who love this stuff and love to hang out at the Capitol and figure out what the deadline calendar is going to look like at the on deadline week. Everybody doesn't have to be that. But it is important to have those basic civic skills that can help you navigate those problems that you're going to face, you and your family are going to face, you and your neighbors are going to face. It's just important that kids are learning that as it is how to balance their checkbook and, you know, what is a credit card and those kind of things. So we have to prepare our citizens, you know, for life. And this is just one piece of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so much of this stuff, I don't. Most of us don't tune in until it has a personal impact, right? And as like a recent example for listeners, you know, my youngest daughter has some health complications, some special needs. And now that she's just turned four, so as we're looking at her entering the school system, it's having to change the conversation for my wife and I about, well, what do we need out of school? Like, what does she need? That is a question that I did not even think about with my older kids. And so, you know, we recently like reached out to one of our, to our state senator for a constituent meeting because we knew that she's experienced some of this stuff herself as a mom and in the elected office. Like she's part of the disability caucus and starting those conversations of like, hey, we need to know from you, like as a parent, or can you connect us with other parents you might know? And also from a policy perspective, like what are we doing from the state level? And we'll engage with our school board and whatever other layers we need to. But like, we want to talk about what this looks like. And, you know, we were walking in the neighborhood with our daughter the other night and we're confronted with the lack of sidewalks. And I know like if any of our listeners listen to This Week in Oklahoma Politics on KOSU with Ryan Kiesel and
Neva Hill.
Neva Hill, thank you. Yeah. Yes. Ryan lives in my neighborhood and he frequently talks about the lack of sidewalks in our neighborhood because he has kids who walk to school and he lives two blocks closer to the school than I do. And I'm always like, oh, yeah, we need sidewalks. But when my wife and I walk and the dog, it's fine to walk in the street. But now walking with a 4-year-old, I was like, oh, no, we need a sidewalks today.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, oh, right, these are things that matter. And you can either throw up your hands and be frustrated that we don't have them or you can do what the generation students do, right? Generation citizen students do and do a root cause analysis of like, why don't we have these basic needs for our community? Who do we need to talk to about it? And then start doing the work to make it happen.
Right.
Ava, since you're here and you are
yes, let's hear
a
your
little
voice.
Bit younger, a little bit younger than Michelle and I, and maybe have more recently experienced civic education in schools.
Yes.
I don't have a good sense. Michelle probably has a good sense, and I don't. But tell us a little bit about what your experience learning about civics and government in schools has been like for you.
I think I probably around my senior year of high school, I took a U.S. government class where, you know, I did financial literacy as well. I think that was when I started that in my Oklahoma history class where I started really engaging more into government and in those history classes and government classes I was taking. But I think it's mainly just because of the teachers. I think.
And you had Mr. Goppel, right?
Mr. Oppel, yes.
Yes. Sorry, Goppel for short, yes.
Yes, Goppel for short.
Greg Oppel, yes, Goppel. Yes. Who is an excellent teacher.
No, wonderful, wonderful. I think that that's why I was able to retain just so much information that I could have learned years before. But again, you know, depending on the curriculum, it might not be as engaging for younger students. And so, you know, you can sit and listen to a teacher talk for, you know, 45 minutes and let it go in one ear and out the other. But, you know, with him, he got us to do activities that, you know, got us out of our seats. And we went out in the hallway and did activities. We worked with all the counties in Oklahoma on a big map in our hallways. And so I think that is one of the amazing things about, you know, the programs that you work with, Michelle, is that those types of projects can leave an impact on students. And I think that that is what can really push some individuals to actually go out and make a difference. Because, you know, something has to be done and it has to be, you know, the younger generation. And I feel like a lot of people my age are very passionate about local government and politics. It's just getting the confidence to actually go out and say something. And because, you know, depending on where what your point of views are, you know, you might be a little bit more nervous to speak out about certain things, you know, in fear of what type of retaliation you get. And so students just need to be able to see that they are capable of those things. But, you know, it just can be difficult for sometimes. So that's, you know, structured situations like that, I think, are really, really helpful.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, one of the things that sounds like you're talking around, right, is like something we can do. Me, Michelle, listeners, this is for you also, right? Like, we can all be mentors.
Yes,
or
of course. Yeah,
model
just
this
some
behavior.
Guidance.
Yeah.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes sometimes is just somebody to be like, hey, all it takes is a phone call. It could, all it takes is an email. You know, these are just, people just need to understand that it is not as difficult as it seems to be.
Yeah.
Because I think that that is the agenda for some individuals is that, you know, everything's so difficult, you know, right now that, you know, you can't, nothing's changing, everything's crazy. You just want to kind of sit in a hole and not, you know, really do anything about it. You just feel like everything's too big. But yeah. I think that if, you know, just you tell, go out and tell people that it just, you know, 1%, that's all it takes. It's just, you just do 1% and that can, all of that together can just really make a big difference.
Yeah. Just do a little bit more than what you've been doing. If you've been doing nothing, it's really easy, but just a little bit more.
Just,
if you vote occasionally, vote more often. And there was an analysis last year that some of our friends at the League of Women Voters had really touted. And that was that in the breakdown of ages of voters, the number of voters ages like 18 to 35 is the same number of voters as there are 65 and older, mm-hmm. right? So the youngest yeah. and the oldest, the same number of people. Mm. The difference is turnout, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Older voters turn out at like 80% and young voters turn out at like 20 or 30%.
Ridiculous.
And so it's like if more young voters would vote, the policies would shift, like elected offices would shift immediately. Like
absolutely.
That. Yeah. It could, oh, yeah. You could fundamentally change Congress this year by just voting.
Yeah.
And so I know people feel like their vote doesn't matter. It's like, it definitely doesn't matter if you don't vote. And there's a massive amount of research that just shows, right, that like if voters will participate, the system by its very nature is designed to be more reflective of who votes, not just who lives, but who votes. And so you gotta turn out.
Yes. Which is why civic learning is so important because, you know, one thing I hear all the time, I heard this whenever I taught my government class at Redlands years ago, a lot of younger people or older people who've just never voted before don't know how. They don't know how to register. They, even if they're registered, they don't know where to go. They don't know. They're intimidated because they're afraid, well, I don't know the answers to everything I'm voting on. They don't maybe know where to find those answers. So it is on each of us to take the time to, you know, your young niece or, you know, your neighbor, have that just conversation about it. And I did a voter research project in those Redlands classes where I had students, you know, go through and find those answers. Yeah. And then after, well, it's not that hard. And then after they voted, oh, well, it wasn't that hard. It's just, again, they just don't know the answers and there's a lot going on in their lives. And so we just have to meet kids where they are, meet our neighbors where they are.
Right.
And that's what we try to do at Generation Citizen. And I'd like to put in a little plug. We do have, we are in schools all over the state, but if your school does not have Generation Citizen, I'd like to invite you to shoot me an email. My email address is mtilley, that's M like Michelle, T-I-L-L-E-Y, at generationcitizen.org. And I'd love to visit with you or a teacher you know or an administrator or school board member you know who would like to help put this opportunity for students in your school.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you for doing that. And I know we have a number of educators and administrators who listen to the show because I get messages from them regularly. So if you didn't catch that or if you have questions, listeners, feel free to reach out to me. I will make sure you get connected to Michelle. And we can, together, we can really kick up civic learning in Oklahoma. We can punch it up, plus it up. If you guys don't follow Sandwiches of History on Instagram, I highly recommend. Okay. He's a very just normal guy, but he likes to plus up sandwiches. Anyway, that's
writing it down right now.
Nothing to do with civic learning, but it's lunchtime, and that makes me hungry and happy. Michelle Tilley, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for sharing your experience, Ava. That was amazing.
Of course. I think that, you know, it's always helpful to have all different types of point of view.
Yeah.
It's very useful.
Yes.
Ava, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
It's your first day success. Success on your first day on the job. Yes. Listeners, thank you for being here as well. As I said at the top of the show, we'll be back next week with an episode solely dedicated to legislative update. I know we've strayed away from that a bit. And then we might even have a special episode the week after because Scott, who has not been here for a couple of months because he's been pulled away to do actual work, Scott and I are going on a trip to our nation's capital, and we might even record a remote episode while we're there. Scott and Andy Go to D.C. sounds like a reality show that nobody wants to watch, honestly, but it'll be a good time. All right, listeners, I'll say again, decisions are made by those who show up. This is your chance. Please find ways to show up in your community. Volunteer, connect with Generation Citizen, connect with us, any of our partner organizations. We'd be happy to facilitate that. And have a good week.